Hi, I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, a discussion forum to share innovative and relevant thoughts, research, and ideas on education today and to explore ways to help prepare students to thrive. Welcome to this episode of Education Conversations, Building Resiliency and Well-Being. Teachers play an essential role in the lives of their students, inspiring learners and preparing them for life after high school. Too often overlooked, though, is the emotional stability they provide as steady, caring individuals in the lives of their students. Teachers can model resilience and help students find well-being, especially in the aftermath of the pandemic and a devastating hurricane. This kind of support has been very vital. Students across the country and certainly here in our community are experiencing a mental health crisis. Many students are struggling, but what happens when teachers are struggling too? And how can we best support students and teachers so they can become more resilient and find their own well-being? Well, today we're going to explore that topic a little bit more, and we've got a terrific guest with us, and that is Mandy O'Malley, and she is the Director of Community Outreach and Training at Resilient Retreat, an organization that helps trauma survivors, first responders, teachers, and other workers in helping professions better manage their own stress and struggles. And what's wonderful about Resilient Retreat is they are located on a beautiful 84 acres of conservation land. So if you want a respite, they certainly can provide that, where they have programs on site and virtually so that people who have experienced trauma can access support and well-being. A Sarasota native, Mandy graduated from Pineview School herself and went on to earn a degree in psychology from Florida State University. And she has been a mental health care professional for over 20 years. She has worked in child protection, providing intervention and abuse prevention, and today, be it guiding community programs, educating parents, or talking to someone in crisis on the Resilient Retreat's Kind Line, Mandy is dedicated to improving the lives of others. Mandy, welcome to Education Conversations. I'm so glad that you could join me today.
I'm thrilled to have the chance for this conversation. Thanks for having me.
Oh my goodness. And I can't wait to see where you take us. I have listeners, for those of you who may not have ever been exposed to Resilient Retreat and or Mandy O'Malley, she truly is a hallmark professional in this field. And so I'm really looking forward to learning and growing from her. So I want to start first with just the term resiliency, which we use, I think the community uses, it might even be overused somewhat. It's a very popular term. And so I'm just kind of curious to hear today, if you were to put a pinpoint on how Resilient Retreat looks at resiliency, how would you define that?
Sure. Resiliency has become one of those buzzwords. You know, we hear a lot about self-care and resiliency without really diving into what that can look like in a practical sense. How do we weave that into our everyday life? And what really are we talking about when we say those terms? Resiliency is really seen as our ability to bounce back from stressors. Sometimes we have this idea that Zen is our goal. It's not really our goal. Mm-hmm. It's the ability to return after stress to a sense of regulation and calm. So that's what we look at, is how do we give people tools? Because we don't live in a vacuum, and stress is not necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It propels us forward, it protects us, but we have to learn how to manage, how to regulate our nervous system, how to regulate our emotions, and how to return to a sense of calm. Because as you mentioned, people are surviving trauma. Mm-hmm. Either as primary survivors or they're exposed to secondary trauma through their work on a daily basis. So these really need to be everyday tools that people have.
Resilient Retreat has been around for a few years. When did you all start?
We started about 4 years ago, and we just moved into our Resilient Retreat campus last November. So we've been providing services, but now we have a home that you mentioned, that gorgeous piece of property where we have a home base for our clients to come.
So the work then, even though it was 4 years in its existence right now, it was developed and it was designed and it was created because there was a need. Why now? Why did you start it now, and what's happening in the world? Give us some context around that.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Sydney Turner had the foresight of recognizing, when she was becoming the expert in research around trauma, to kind of foretell where we were going to be heading. The need has always been there, but the last few years have been so difficult for so many people. We know, regardless of those anomalies that we've had, like natural disasters and a pandemic, that 7 in 10 Americans survive a trauma in their life. Helping professionals are dealing with secondary trauma with the clients that they're working with. But then the last few years, the timing has really been there for the conversations that we want to start having at Resilient Retreat. It's hard to find silver linings in what the last couple of years have brought, but the silver lining we see is that people are more open to the conversation because stress has become something that we recognize as a universal factor. Mm-hmm. The trauma of the pandemic, the trauma of natural disasters, the trauma of change. Change is happening so quickly now, and giving people tools to be able to adjust and take care of their mental health, I think now is much more openly understood than it was a few years ago even.
And I'm curious to know, as you all who work in this every day, you had mentioned trauma's been around for a long time. So is it that the trauma has increased? Have we just lived in peaceful, non-threatening times for a while and we've lost our capacity to respond to it? Is it a combination? Are we seeing that, and particularly with the lens of just with the kids and developing the skills to be able to handle and cope and self-regulate, what's happening there?
Well, I think we could have conversations for days about that exact topic. I think it's a combination. You know, it's a yes and. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are more connected than we've ever been, but we're also more isolated than we've ever been. Mm-hmm. Yes, stress has always happened, but it's at a heightened level. Mm-hmm. Yes, mental health struggles have been there, but now 1 in 5 Americans are diagnosed with a mental health or behavioral health disorder. Anxiety has increased, depression has increased. Some of that is recognition and accessibility to diagnoses and treatment. Some of it is exaggerated stressors that are really taking a toll, and it's taking a toll over a long period of time. Our kids and young adults are having a mental health crisis. Those people that are working with them are exposed to that. They're drawn to helping professions because they want to help, and they're seeing the people that they want to help struggling more than they ever have before.
Yeah. And so when building resiliency in schools, the focus often tends to be on the students. However, many teachers are also charged with developing and modeling the resiliency in the classroom as they themselves are struggling. So for many teachers, asking for help feels uncomfortable, maybe somewhat foreign to them. Why is it important that teachers find the support?
When we look at studies around the impact of the pandemic, we have quickly recognized the impact of the stress to those in the medical profession, as we should. But what we're now seeing is the impact over time on our educators. They've been one of our hardest hit groups with that secondary trauma because they're trying to assist students. Their world had changed. The system of education had changed. Then we add on top of that, whatever your beliefs are, a political climate around education that's new. And we know studies show the best teachers, as you well know, are the ones who connect the most closely with their students. That connection is what makes them great, but it's also what makes them very susceptible to compassion fatigue, which is that combination of burnout and exposure to secondary stress that helpers get. And certainly educators are just swimming in that every single day.
Give us a little more understanding, at least for me, maybe some of our listeners out there, when you mean secondary stress.
Sure. So when I am working with people and they are having an emotional experience, I'm exposed to their experience. As human beings, we're social creatures. Not only am I emotionally having a reaction to their reaction, but my nervous system is having a reaction based on my perception of them struggling through our mirror neurons. We're hardwired to be empathetic and connect. So when I'm working with people under stress, whether that's a student in school, their family who's struggling, my colleagues who are struggling, my own household may be struggling, I'm constantly reacting to that on multiple levels.
It sounds like almost the more empathetic you are, the higher the degree you have or risk of compassion fatigue, because you're almost living vicariously in that experience. That's what it sounds like to me.
Oh, it's absolutely right. Just yesterday I was doing a workshop and I made the joke that compassion fatigue is kind of the universe's biggest backhanded compliment, because it means you're really, really good at your job. Mm. You're connecting with people well, you're empathetic, you're understanding. So it's kind of that badge of honor in a strange way. But the irony is we've never talked about it that way. So mm-hmm. there's always been this stigma that if I'm a helping professional and it's hard, I must be doing something wrong. It doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. It actually means you're doing something really right and you're really good at your job.
So really just trying to provide people who are in those types of fields, like teachers, with the armor, with the protection, with the tools to better modulate and, I guess you had said regulate, but really right. to respond better in a way that doesn't drive them into the ground. I'm hesitant to say that because I don't mean to speak literally.
Right. But even more sad is how many people leave helping professions. You know, they're a great teacher, but they think, I'm really struggling and I must be not cut out for this. And they leave the profession when actually with the right supports, mm-hmm. the right tools, mm-hmm. the right understanding, the reduction of the stigma around those feelings and that struggle, they could be perfectly poised to be an amazing teacher to change kids' lives. But we lose them in helping professions, not just teachers. We lose them as first responders. We lose them when I was working in child protection, people would leave the profession who were great at it. But it was because the system let them down and let them think that they were doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's the system who needs to be more supportive mm-hmm. of our helping professionals.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so interesting. I hear this often in endurance sports. So something mm-hmm. like, you know, running a marathon, you might hit, you know, by mile 21, you may hit a wall. And they often say when you're training for endurance races that it's not just a physical, it's equally mental. Mm-hmm. And so you have to build your capacity of your mental dexterity mm-hmm. so that you can better respond and adapt to whatever challenges like running a marathon might present. So that leads me to the next question. And what programs does Resilient Retreat offer specifically for teachers? And are there any outcomes that you might be able to share of some of the resources that are available? What difference is it making?
Absolutely. It's making a huge difference. You can imagine being founded by a research psychologist. We like our data at Resilient Retreats. So the nice thing is we can show people what's really working. And also, if we find that we have programs that aren't having the impact that we want, even though they're evidence-based, like everything that we do, we can pivot to something that works for the population that we have here mm-hmm. in our community. So we have a lot of different ways people can engage with our services. We have a kind line, which is available for people to call anytime they just need that listening ear. Confidentiality is important there. And they can just call and have a moment to talk to someone who's a trauma professional who has training in compassion fatigue. We have about 30 plus programs a month. Some of those are virtual. Some of those are on our beautiful retreat site that allow people to try a lot of different programming that have at least one of three key tenets that we use for everything that we do at Resilient Retreat. You mentioned before about protective factors. We know that there's three key things that the studies tell us equip us to heal from prior trauma and give us protection from future stress. Mm-hmm. Those are making meaning of our experiences, having interpersonal relationships and community, and then learning tools to regulate our nervous system. So we have about 30 programs a month that do at least one of those things. They look like peer support groups, equine assisted learning, artistic expression. There's a lot of different things that we do. Then we also have day retreats and overnight retreats where people can come and do programming in a more condensed way. And so there's a lot of different opportunities for people to interface with us. In addition to participant programs, I have the privilege of doing training in the community. So if organizations want to start these conversations and equip their staff, we provide that as well. And all of the services that we provide for individuals are at no charge to that individual, because we don't want that to be a barricade to people getting support. And then when we do work with organizations, we do that on a sliding fee scale to make sure that that's accessible for people too. And really, we're trying to just start those conversations, give people the tools, and reduce the stigma around asking for help, which is really hard for helping professionals to do.
That is so fantastic. And having been an organization that has benefited from your presentations, I can certainly give a resounding endorsement. We just recently had you come and be a part of an education roundtable talking to a small group of teachers, and that even resulted in a positive response of teachers now checking out your resources and getting engaged.
Which is the biggest compliment we could have. I know not too long ago, I was down at a school in Northport, and by the time I got back, I don't know who they were because it's kept confidential, but I was told by a staff member, 3 people called in for services on your drive back. So it's a huge boost to wind in my sails, but more importantly, it speaks to the need that's there.
We know
that as soon as people start recognizing that this service is available, they want to take advantage of it because the need is really great.
I agree. And I don't want to lose sight of the reference you made to your KindLine. Mm. So can you give a shout out, some clarification of how someone can actually access that?
Sure. It's our phone number for the KindLine is 941-343-0039. Anytime our office is open, so that's 8:30 to 6 Tuesday through Friday, someone can call that number and they can just say, I just need someone to talk to for a few minutes. Sometimes that will evolve into assistance with resources, because navigating resources is really difficult. And sometimes that might be how we can help. Sometimes it might be, we've got some programs that I think will help, and they begin to screen in for our services. Sometimes it's, I just need a few minutes to talk to somebody and get my feet back under me. And maybe I have an appointment with a therapist, but it's not for a week, and I want to talk to somebody for a minute now. Maybe it's, I usually talk to my spouse and they're getting so tired of hearing this every day and I need someone else to listen to. It's just an opportunity to either have a check-in for when it's needed or a proactive check-in with somebody.
So any of those resources you just described for teachers to receive access, no charge.
No charge for individuals at all.
They can
call that number. They can also go on our website and see our calendar and even start an application process there. And the other thing is there's not a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels overwhelming to just make the phone call, and then you get told there's so many different things you have to sign and fill out. We do an e-consent form that's really easy. It takes less than 10 minutes for someone to screen in for our services, and then they can come to as many things as they would like.
Mm-hmm. That's outstanding that you all offer this, and anything we can do to help spread the word, we're down for that. I want to kind of pivot a little bit to just your own personal entry into this work. You have a real unique experience having graduated from the same school your 2 sons went to, and that was Pineview School. How have you seen the attitudes about student well-being as well as the support systems available to students changed from when you attended to now?
Well, I have an even more interesting addition to that story is I met my husband at Pineview in 4th grade. So he also has that experience of being a multi-generational Pineview person. And I think what's difficult is sometimes we are expecting kids to do developmentally inappropriate things. You know, we forget that they're kids, that shouldn't have to have high stakes for every test and shouldn't have to fit into a box. And we forget that it's important to let kids explore who they're becoming and be creative and be curious. And that makes me sad, because I think those are really important skills for kids. And when I talk to young people, they feel like they have to have their life figured out really early. And they forget that there's lessons along the way, but they're being taught that by sometimes pressure that school systems are under and the climate that we're in. So I think I do miss that ability to be kids that my husband and I had, and the embracing of some kind of, you know, creative things that happened back when we were at Pineview a long time ago.
Yeah, and that was probably also before social media was around, and that, I'm quite sure, made an impact.
Absolutely. The world is so different now than it was then. But we've been very, very lucky. I can say we're incredibly grateful, because My husband and I felt like we got a great public education growing up here, and our kids did too. And that's not something every parent has the luxury of saying, but we really were very, very grateful for everything that our local community has done for our sons.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. We have such great schools, and I know the teachers particularly are working so hard at loving on the children and helping them become wonderful human beings. Mm-hmm. And so giving them resources and supports like this is really important. I'm reminded, as we've had several guests on the podcast, we continue to talk about how the changing world is in our midst and how we need to make sure the systems that support the people within the world are also changing at kind of that same pace, if you will. What are some other practical ways that teachers and adults who support students can promote resiliency and help students find well-being? What are some practical tips you might be able to give to us?
I think the first thing is remembering that we're modeling the behavior. So as helping professionals, we all worry about taking care of other people. And we feel selfish when we take care of ourselves. I have fallen into that. I think many helpers think, I'm so worried about taking care of everyone else. Teachers are worried about their students. But we forget the impact that modeling the behavior has. For me, I can help give myself permission to take better care of my own resilience by thinking, how do I want my sons to behave? Because they're going to behave the way they see me doing it, not the way I tell them to do it. Mm-hmm. And so for teachers, I think it's really important. I also think it's a really important guideline to think, how can I de-escalate a situation if I can't de-escalate my own feelings? So I have to learn tools to go back to being regulated and calm and show that I can make a mistake, I can get upset, but this is how I come back from it. Mm-hmm. This is how I move forward, because that's what students are watching. And then continuing to build those relationships so that when students are struggling, when your colleagues are struggling, it's a safe place. Mm-hmm. Brené Brown writes all of the time throughout her books about this magical formula that is really simple, but yet we find it to be really hard. And it's when vulnerability is met with empathy. Mm-hmm. And every chance we have to meet vulnerability with empathy reinforces the fact that it's okay to feel however I'm feeling, and no feeling is final.
Well said. Well, Mandy, thank you so much for joining me in this important discussion, and thank you for the work you do through Resilient Retreat. It really is remarkable, and I encourage everyone to visit its website, resilientretreat.org. If you're even ever so able to go to their 84 acres, that alone is worth the visit for sure. And again, just remember, they do have the Kind Line, and that is available to anyone free of charge. And that number is 941-343-0039. So if you'd like to learn more about them or the Education Foundation and the resources that we provide students and teachers, visit us at edfoundationsrq.org. We hope you'll definitely get involved with us. So everyone, thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, and be sure to tune in to our other episodes of Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.